So you'll have to excuse me for getting a couple of messages through there. One of the great things is there's enough pressure anyway without having a room full of you guys, and obviously we're live streaming on the internet. But the demos I'm going to show you guys today, I actually pair programmed them with my son, and he's watching the live stream at the minute, so he's sending me texts going, "Don't muck the demos up." Now that's real pressure. So today we're going to talk about two-speed IT powered by Azure. I'm going to talk about hopefully some cool stuff and hopefully some relation to real world stuff. I thought as well, yesterday we had Dan talking about service bus networking unicorns, and we had Rick talking about resource manager fairies. So today it's going to get a little bit dark, and we're going to talk about zombies and creepers in my presentation, but we'll come to that in a moment. So I know quite a few of you guys in Sweden, but for anybody who hasn't met me before, I'm Mike Stevenson. I do loads of integration work, loads of Azure work. I've done lots of real-world Azure projects as well, and I'm also a Pluralsight author and a Microsoft MVP, and all my stuff's up there. So if anybody wants to chat about this kind of thing, feel free to reach out. Now, today's session, there's three real areas to it. One's going to be a very brief touch on what is two-speed IT. Then we're going to go through some example projects. And the outcomes I want to get from today are, firstly, I want to make you rethink about what Azure is and how you propose Azure solutions to customers, how you use them yourself. And hopefully everybody will go away with the idea that, oh, there's something in Azure I hadn't really thought of like that before. At the same time, I want to show you some cool demos. And hopefully, if you've got kids, there'll be some stuff you can take away from today and maybe do a little bit of IT work with your kids. That'll be quite good fun. So two-speed IT, then, I pulled some statistics from Information Weekly about general customer satisfaction around IT organizations. And this is a year or two old, but the theme's still the same. Customers have generally been dissatisfied with their IT departments for a long time now. And, you know, some numbers that go with that. But this general dissatisfaction has led to a couple of things that we have as challenges in IT, and particularly stealth IT, where the business goes and creates and gets their own applications without IT being involved. IT is also perceived to be a little bit of a blocker to the business. And this has kind of, been a big problem for us all to deal with for a number of years. One of the responses to that has been this proposal of a two-speed IT capability. So a quote from Gartner here is that they believe by 2017, 75% of organizations will be talking about and having a two-speed IT capability. Now, although you may not have come across that concept already, we're all familiar with Agile. And Agile's kind of a subset of one of the things people tend to do within a two-speed IT model. Now, just to drill a little bit deeper into that, Gartner proposed this idea of two different types of IT, where they use the analogy of a marathon runner to describe the traditional approach to IT. So it's all about mission-critical systems. It's all about low attitudes to risk that needed to be very low. We want slow, stable growth, stable changes. And it's all about what they describe as systems of record. So we don't want to break anything that would be critical to the business. The adverse effect of that means if you've got an organization that works in an environment that's quite chaotic and has a lot of change, it's difficult to respond to customer needs. It's difficult to keep up with competitors. So the other mode of IT, they sort of compare to a sprinter. And the idea here is that you'll have part of your organization would take risks. They would work in an agile way. They may cut red tape. They may sort of sacrifice some of the recognized good practices in order to be more agile, in order to deliver stuff quicker. And also the idea that actually, if the idea is not working, we can fail fast and get rid of it without spending too much money. So the idea for a two-speed IT is if you've got these two capabilities, you can respond to the things that customers really want where we need to deliver value, but we can look after and maintain our real key assets and make sure that they don't take on the risk of doing things too quick and uncontrolled. Now, I'm a believer that in a two-speed model, the cloud has a big relationship to this in terms of what it can offer your organization. So if we think firstly about the traditional mode where it's usually IT ops driven, so some opportunities where cloud may help you would be the idea of moving servers off-site. So you may choose to power down some servers on-prem, run them off-site instead so you can turn them off when you're not using them, simple things like that. DR patterns where you might move DR to the cloud instead of a secondary data center. And also things like dev test environments. They're really good candidates that a typical mode one IT part of your organization could be looking at. At the same time, the mode two, the agile mode, the sprinter mode, they're really on about quick provisioning. You know, we had things like yesterday where Rick showed us Resource Manager and how we can spin up quite complex environments in a very easy way that we can tear them down very quickly as well. The, you know, the cloud really with this, you know, pay for what you use, provision it quickly, trash it when you don't need it. That's all about sort of empowering this sprinter to take ownership of delivering that project quickly and effectively. Now, in the presentation today, that's the bit I'm going to focus on. I'm going to focus on how do we use the cloud, use Azure to supercharge these mode two IT teams. So I work as a an integration architect and a cloud architect. And when we work with organizations who have sprinter teams, there's a couple of challenges for us. So number one, how do we create a vision for what we want the teams to deliver when they're working so quickly? That's difficult to do. How do we make sure those teams don't just go off and do something completely unaligned to the IT strategy? At the same time, when I talk to the business, I need to be able to have a way to articulate a vision to them of what it is that we want them to do, how we'll solve their business problems, but in a tangible way. So one of the things we came up with using Azure was this idea of a model office and reference architecture. Now, many organizations I've worked with, they may have a big whiteboard with this huge diagram that, you know, sometimes it's even out of date, but that's their reference architecture. But what we wanted to do was actually build our reference architecture. And we built a scale version. So I did a lot of work with some education customers. And the idea was we built this thing called Acme University, which was a scaled model of the university that we were actually working with. So we've got many of the systems that the university would have in it, we'd actually have in our reference architecture in Azure. So we had things like BizTalk. We can put SAP up there. We've got Active Directory. We can also bring in Azure, CRM, Office 365. And what this gives us is a real reference architecture that I can go and try stuff out with. I can change it. I can see if I do this with this system, what's the impact on the rest of my architecture? It's something real that I can demonstrate, not just a whiteboard. Now, the great thing is when I want to start talking about visualizing stuff for the business, we had this idea about how can we, you know, as an integration guy, demos are always really, really lame and look boring. So we had this idea of using something like Minecraft as a way of visualizing what a business process could look like, implemented in our reference architecture, and gives us a way to like simulate some of these processes. Over the next few slides, I'm going to talk about some example projects where we use this approach to kind of pitch what the idea was. Then I'm going to talk about how they turn into real projects and just go through some of the demos as well. So the first one's a one called organizational telemetry. And we have the challenge here of a couple of scenarios where we were going to use this. The first one is about find a free PC. So if you imagine every university often has multiple sites, you know, you may have sites in the same city. You may have today, you know, many universities have sites in other countries as well. But the key thing is within these sites, you've often got many buildings. Within these buildings, there's many PCs. And a typical university might have 5,000, 10,000 PCs, but you've got a big student community too. So if I'm a student and I want to go and do some work somewhere, I can waste a lot of time trying to find a good place to go to get a free PC. You know, that's something we can offer a better student experience by letting them find one quickly so they can just focus on doing their work. At the same time, we also have scenarios where, you know, we want to look at how well utilized are our buildings in the university. Is there parts of the university where nobody is and we can maybe shut them down and save some of the energy costs of that building? And the idea here is that if we can get telemetry about what's going on in our organization, we can present a real-time view for people to make decisions based on. So when we start thinking about how we might proof of concept that idea, we thought, well, let's take the building example here. So in Minecraft, we created some buildings, and we wanted to stream telemetry from people going in and out of these buildings to the cloud. We used Azure Event Hubs that Dan was talking about yesterday, which is a great way of streaming Internet of Things style telemetry to it. And we could plug that into the sort of business intelligence stack to produce this real-time dashboard so we can see what people are doing. Now, I'm going to give you a quick look at what that looks like. So you can see here, no, you can't see here. Let's stretch our... duplicate our screens. So you can see here, I've got a dashboard in Power BI. You know, I don't know if anybody's used that already, but it's a really, really easy way to create some quite rich visualizations of data. Now, if I go into Minecraft, and I'll just minimize that down so you can see the board there. But in our Minecraft game, we've got some buildings here. So this building's the library building. This building with a little pink roof on's the cake shop. And if we go towards the building, you can see there's a little panel on the floor here. Now, what's quite cool about that panel is it can be as close as you can get in Minecraft to an Internet of Things style device, so it'll detect something happening. And when I walk on that panel, it's going to send a little thing called a redstone signal to a computer, which I'll show you in a second. You can see there that thing lit up when I stepped on that panel. Now, what's quite cool is that that signal goes to that little yellow computer there, and from the computer, I've got a program that's sitting listening for those signals, pinging messages up to an event hub in the cloud. So as you can see, when I walk in and out of this building, you'll start seeing in a second that Power BI thing starts going up. You know, so with a really, really simple demo there, you know, my son and I pair programmed this, and it took us less than 2.5 hours, including building the buildings, to create that demo. Such a simple thing, but it illustrates the point of how we can talk to the business about an IoT solution when they don't really know what that is. You know, much of the industry isn't that familiar with it yet. Likewise, I can do the same in the cake shop, and, you know, go into the cake shop and you'll start seeing it go up and down as well. So not exactly real time, but it's pretty close. From the program in Minecraft, I can actually spin up extra data. So all I did from Minecraft was told it what building it was. As you go in and out the buildings at the same time, that dashboard will show you how many people are in each building. So really, really simple thing. But when we go back to the two-speed idea, you know, our real-world project, if we start looking at what that looks like, well, if I think of the free PC scenario, I can put an agent on a PC, push that out to all of the PCs in the university and have that feed real-time data about who's on that PC, potentially what programs they're being used, different stuff about what's going on. At the same time, I could feed things if I got some, you know, some sensors, Raspberry Pis, you know, even research projects. That gives us a great way to plug research projects into this platform. And the key thing to notice here is actually in the architecture, from the proof of concept, take away Minecraft and put the agents on the front, the rest of the architecture is exactly the same for a real project as it was for that proof of concept. And I think as an architect, that's a really powerful message where I'm not saying here's a tiny little proof of concept, but actually, you know, the real world's completely different. All we're doing is scaling it up and paying more money for it, but it's the same architecture under the hood. Now, if we think about that example, we used a couple of features in Azure there. So we used Service Bus Event Hubs. I used Stream Analytics, Power BI. You know, delivering that solution, we think for our use case, that would probably cost us less than $40 a month to deliver that solution for those couple of use cases. That's powerful, you know. That's exactly what two-speed IT is about, delivering cheap, delivering fast, getting business value. The other quite cool thing in that demo, other than the little bit of code in Minecraft, server side in the cloud, we didn't write any code. You know, it was just configure a job, configure an event hub, configure Power BI. So, you know, we didn't code anything. Next, we've got this project called the Staff HR Self-Service Portal. So here we've got the business context where SAP's our system of record for employees. And SAP's a really great system, but it's big, powerful, it's expensive to change, it's difficult to train people how to use it. So what we tend to have is the HR department would be the specialist users who would use SAP. But if we wanted to kind of cut costs and empower employees to self-service their own employment record to a degree, training everybody up and buying all the licenses to use SAP would be a big exercise. So what we wanted to do was create a system of engagement that would integrate with SAP. And with that, we could then put the system of engagement maybe in our SharePoint staff portal and just integrate it through to the back end. The challenge of that is, our SharePoint servers are on-prem, but we might want to do provide a hosted application that lives in an Azure web app. So if that's off-site, how do we get back through to SAP? So in my proof of concept, I'll go into the demo of this a bit more later, but I've got this, what I've called the API and services stack, where I've got API management in the cloud, we've got service bus relay, we can reach down on-prem, and we've got this kind of microservices architecture where we can hook into various systems to do stuff. And we demoed this initially with Minecraft, but as it turned into a real project, really what we did was we built the SharePoint provider hosted app on the front end in an Azure website. At the back end, we actually used this thing called Link to SAP, which is a really great .NET tech for being able to call into Babbies. And the plumbing work for that project was actually the same as the proof of concept again. And we just ended up building features, getting the right data, making the right updates. But actually the plumbing work of that architecture was the same as what was in the POC. So in that architecture, we used Application Insights for monitoring, an Azure website, Service Bus Relay. And, what it really allowed us to do was focus on delivering business features, not delivering technical architecture. Within probably a week of us first starting that, we're delivering features. We're not spending months in traditional projects building all this stuff before the business can see anything. Now, what was cool about that was we got to the point where once we'd identified the right BAPI we needed in SAP, 2 hours later, we'd be consuming that as a service through our platform from SharePoint. That's pretty powerful. And that's SAP integration. That's about as hard as it gets. The running costs again for that were peanuts, and you can see on the board there. Now that architecture is used again in this demo, but this demo is going to be a little bit more complex. So we're going to talk about a real business process now, something difficult. Not everything in two-speed IT can be simple. We need to think about other, more real world, more complex stuff. How would we handle that? So we had the challenge of if we've got an existing process where a student would apply for a university course, let's pretend that in the real world that's implemented with BizTalk. We get an application that comes in, BizTalk handles it, does some kind of orchestration across multiple systems, does all the things that it's done for years. But the world's changing, and the world that we had 5 years ago where the university industry in the UK was a public sector thing, it's really changed heavily, and it's becoming much more like a private sector now. And businesses need to be able to react quickly. And one of those things is offering the way to apply for courses and interact with students using new channels that we're not used to. So what we wanted to do was extend our existing process and offer it out to students in a new and different way. And it's important when we do that, we don't want to risk this existing, implementation that we've got, because it's really key to the business. If we suddenly break that and we can't accept applications, that could put you out of business very quickly. So what we try to do is the idea of take this existing business process in BizTalk, let's offer a new channel where we have an API in the cloud, and we use Service Bus messaging so our API can offload a request to apply for a course to a queue. We can then just make BizTalk listen to that queue and reuse the existing implementation that we already have. That would be pretty cool, so let's have a look at how we might do that. So I'll begin with, I don't think anyone's shown API management yet. So if you haven't seen this before, one of the really cool features in Azure is the API. Is that the screen needs sharing again? Okay, so the API management proxy, you know, everybody talks about API economy these days. Many vendors have built an entire business simply about putting something in front of your API to make it look pretty and give you statistics about it. Azure offers a really low cost way of doing a similar thing, and you can use this API management proxy to be able to create a community around your API, manage it from an operations and admin perspective, control security, have registration to be able to use your API. And that's just a simple view here, and you can see, you know, I've got a lot of different features about groups and users and stuff. But what's quite cool is a developer who wants to consume an application, I could offer out, you know, pretend I'm writing an app in Minecraft here, and I've come in, I've been given access to the university's API, and I can go in and see all the different operations I can execute. And one of the examples is we've got this thing called get a list of courses. So I can try that method out here in API management. And, you know, one of my parameters is the starts with. So I want to get a list of courses that start with the letter A. And I can test this API call out under my security context. And I can see I can pull a list of courses back straight from the console before I've even started building my app. So I know that I'm, as a developer, I'm in a good place. And from API management, I can even get code samples to show me how to call that operation. So I'm in a really good place to start building my app now. And if we have a look in Minecraft, how we might use that. So I'm just going to stretch this out a little bit. So we've got a couple of demos here then. So I need to go out of the cake shop to another part of the world. And I'll show you a couple of different ways we've used this. So the first one is this big screen here. So what I'm doing here is I can reach through my API in the cloud on-prem. I'll move a bit closer. And I can show you a list of the current system status of all of the university's key systems. That's live from the university, by the way, which is quite cool. Now, we have that available as public data, so that's quite a nice way to demo that. But what I've done on the end there is I've put a demo system, because I've got another feature in here where when it refreshes that data, if anything's not green, it launches a firework so that you would know something was wrong. So if you see a firework go off in the background, you know one of the systems are down, and to demo that, I've got the sample system here. Again, reusing the same architecture, so using this API in the cloud that reaches down on-prem, we've also got our treasure room, and this was the first one that me and my boy did, where we've got a room that you want to protect somebody from getting into. So normally in Minecraft, if you come up to a door, it just automatically opens, except in this case where we don't want it to. So what we did was, you know, and this is one of the samples for Minecraft where you can create a password protected door where you've got to put the password to get in. But hang on a minute, in Minecraft, we can do JSON parsing and we can do HTTP. So we can do some stuff for that, you know? So what we did was we thought, well, rather than hard coding a password, why don't we integrate the door with Active Directory on-prem? Let's do it properly. So if we click on the terminal there and we want to go in, let's run the open door program. So if I add my username, my password, you can see, you know, it's pretty quick as well. The door opens and what happens is it fires a signal around the room to turn all the lights on. That's not the best bit. You know, that's cool, but the best bit's in a second. So what I need to do now is, you know, we did this and then AJ said, well, what about hackers? You know, how do we deal with hackers? So we need some countermeasures in case there's anyone tries to break our security. So before I run this demo, I've got to remember to step away from the trapdoor just in case. So let's try and compromise the security now. So if I put a bad username, run the program. So if I put a bad username and a bad password, access is denied and we get a zombie that comes to try and attack you for breaking into the door. So we need to take this guy out before he kills us and it ruins the rest of our demo. So, you know, I've got a nice powerful sword there. One hit kills a zombie. We did that on Channel 9 apparently as well. And the bit I wasn't quick enough to show you was the trap door opens, and if you're standing on it and you try to hack the security, you actually fall to your death down that trap door. So, you know, same architecture though, you know, API in the cloud, reaches on-prem, can hook into whatever we need to hook into. Let's make it a bit more difficult now then. So if we go to the student's house and we walk in here, and this student's quite a well-off student because you can see he's got a really big screen monitor there. He's got a computer next to it, but he's also got a printer as well. So let's run a program now called Show Courses. Let's spell it right. So let's have courses that start with a bit like we did in API management. So now you can see there's the list of courses that show up on the screen coming out of the courses system. And we've got some Azure training there just for today. But we're in Minecraft and we've got a printer. Let's print these courses. I'll have the ones with A. Now, if you notice, there's a little white thing appeared in the bottom of the printer. So we can go over here and we can get that. And if I turn around here, and there we can print our courses out on some Minecraft paper. We could even, you know, if we had loads of courses, we can even build a book out of that and have, there's our Minecraft course prospectus. How cool is that? Okay, so let's apply for one of these courses then. So what I'm going to do before we do that, we'll just quickly jump out of Minecraft for a moment and we'll have a look at, you know, a little bit old world now. We've got BizTalk server. So in Minecraft, when I apply for a course, you know, I've created this two-speed agile, you know, new channel where we've exposed to the cloud some of our systems. But actually, BizTalk's still part of this architecture. Even though it's a server product, we can create a receive location that's listening to a queue in the cloud. Excuse me, we get our message, we bring it on premise. We've got a parallel lookup to two other applications, so we need to go and get all the students' information. We need to go and get all the course information. We'll create an enrollment message with a map here, and we'll do a send out to the enrollment system. Once that's in the enrollment system, we'll then send an email to the student to say, you know, congratulations, we've received your application, we'll get back to you. So let's have a look at how we can use this then. So in Minecraft, I'm going to run a program called Add Enrollment. So I need to pick a course. So I'll have course number 8. And spelled that wrong. And I add my username, and then I get confirmation that enrollment's gone to the API. Now, if you notice, the enrollment ID is 0, and that's because this is asynchronous. So we drop the message on the queue, and at some point we'll get an email when BizTalk's done its thing and integrated with those systems. So if I'm going to go and check my email in a second and see if I've had anything come through yet. And apologies, I should have really opened this beforehand, but I think we're doing pretty good for time, so.
I'm disappointed. I was thinking an Enderman would turn up with an envelope.
Well, that might be next. You don't know what's coming next, do you? I've got one more demo after this. So we'll just let Outlook spin open really quickly there. In fact, I'll check my phone, it might be quicker. Where are we? So yeah, BizTalk's a bit slow today, I think. Okay, so that's going to come through in a moment or two anyway. So async will allow for that. In fact, actually, we got downloading it. Not to worry. So, you know, that's quite cool. So what have we done? We've taken an existing business process. We've exposed it to the cloud as a new channel. We've got students able to interact with us in a new way, in this case by Minecraft. It could easily be a mobile application. You know, hey, we've got an API management proxy with a developer community. We can get developers building apps for us to let our students apply if we wanted to, you know. World's our oyster, API economy. So If you think of the problem, though, we said to the student, well, we've received your application, we'll get back to you. In fact, there's my email just come through there. So just to show there's nothing up my sleeve. There we go. So, bloody screen. I think it's a Windows 10 thing, you know. There we go. So, no, oh, come on.
It's like a galaxy far, far away. Haha. It is? Yep. Long time ago, isn't
it? Right. Second time lucky. There you go. So there's our email confirming we've received your application for the course. So if we think about this, then the next step was, well, we've got your application, we'll get back to you. That's a problem. So in the UK, every student's pay to go to university now, and every student's worth about £9,000 a year to a university. So if we're saying we'll get back to you, well, students apply to multiple universities. If somebody gets back to them with a better offer quicker than us, they might go to a different university and we might lose £9,000 or, you know, times 3 years or more. So the business, imagine in a two-speed model, the business comes to us and said, well, we've got this idea. We don't know if it's a good idea, but we want to try it. And if it doesn't work, hey, what the hell, we'll throw it away. But we think we can do something with that problem. So they say, well, when somebody reviews the application, we want to tell that student almost as soon as we can they've been approved. We don't want to wait for the post. You know, we don't want to wait till we tick this in the application, somebody creates a letter, posts it to them, and 5 days later they get it. But actually other universities got there in the meantime, so we want to do it straight away. This is where we've got some features in Azure that can help us. So if we go up to the cloud, let's think, two-speed IT, we've got this existing process we don't really want to touch because it's reliable, and we want to kind of experiment a little bit here. So maybe we can use a logic app and see if we can do some interesting things here. So what I could do is, you know, imagine I said to the business, well, look, you know, I know what your system of record is where you approve that application. So with a logic app, I can maybe reach down on premise, detect the fact that you've approve that application, and see if we can use some API connectors to be able to tell that student a bit quicker. Now, I apologize that this demo is pretty simple. It's more about the concept than the actual complexity in the logic app. So you could maybe, you could do some more complex stuff if you wanted to. But the key thing here is that we're going to use the SQL connector to reach down on premise into a SQL database to detect that you've approved that student, get the details of the student. So I think if we scroll down here, So we scroll down here, you can see from the SQL connector, I've got some information about the student. And what I can do is flow that through to the Twilio connector. Let's send the student a text message almost as soon as that their application's been approved and tell them, hey, look, we've approved you. We'll send you some more information, but you know you've been accepted quickly. Let's take a look at that in action then. So if we go back to Minecraft, let's pretend now we're a member of staff at the university. We're not the student anymore, but we'll borrow the student's computer for this. So let's now run a program called Approve Enrollment. So I kind of, you know, it's up my sleeve. I know what the ID for that enrollment's going to be. It's going to be 50, so I can click approve for that, and we'll see on the screen here we've went through the API, we've changed it to approved, we've got the confirmation on the screen there, and then, hey, I've just got a text on my phone here saying, you know, if anyone wants to check it, but it says, congratulations on enrolling for Azure App Service 101, you've been approved, you know. Hey, it's pretty cool, that, isn't it? You know, two-speed IT, we did that quick, easy. It's going to get better, though, because when I tell you about what we actually did. So let's take a quick look at the architecture then. So we had our API, we had our service bus messaging, we had our BizTalk. We're not really using them anymore for this bit because they're the reliable bit we don't really want to change. So we put a logic app in the cloud. We used our SQL connector to go to the database and detect that change. From the logic app, we also used the Twilio connector to reach out and send a text message. Yeah.
So the SQL connector, is it polling or is it?
Yes. Yeah. So you can configure a polling interval
it's
for
a
it.
Long polling thing.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think in that case, it's just querying a view, if I remember right. But there's a few different ways you can configure it, you know. So we think of the Azure features we used there. Then so the key one was the original new channel project. We used service bus messaging, web apps. I've got App Insights in there as well. I know I haven't really showed you guys that too much, but by the way, I've got some videos on my blog that I've just published today with some deeper dive stuff on how these demos work, because obviously we haven't got that much time to go in it. So if you want to know more, check those videos out and give me a shout. The second project about notifications, so we took a logic app, we took some API apps in the new app service. And what was quite cool actually was because I host my API, the one that I wrote myself, I host that in an Azure web app. So I have an app service hosting plan. Well, actually, I can put my API apps and my logic app on that app service hosting plan as well. I don't have to provision more infrastructure for it. And the great thing is that means when I look at the costs for that second project, the running costs are zero. It's using stuff I've already got. So that's another good quick win there. Just one other note on my reference architecture that I've used in these demos. So that if I use that reference architecture a lot, I reckon it costs me about $100 a month when I've got all the servers spun up and I'm doing some stuff with it. Quite often I power it down. So, you know, that demo before this week, I haven't run that demo for about a month. So the reference architecture's just been powered down. So the costs are fairly minimal for that. So as an organization, that idea of a real world, you know, model reference architecture, a bit like Lego version of your company, that's a great thing to do. So let's think back to Two Speed IT now then. So we did some cool demos there, but in the Two Speed IT world, hopefully I've shown you a way that, you know, by doing some of these proof of concepts as an architect, you can paint a picture that looks really great to people about what it is you want to build. But if we empower those sprinter teams in Two Speed IT to give them, you know, Azure features that they can deliver solutions really quickly with, there is some things we need to be careful about. So number one, in a two-speed IT model, you've still got the marathon runners. And the reality is the marathon runners are going to be the ones who look after the solutions that you build. So it's great letting a sprinter team power ahead and deliver a solution. It's no good if that sprinter team then goes off to another project and the marathon runners are left with something they don't know how to run. They don't know how to operate. Also, you know, sometimes companies will use external companies to, you know, help them build this this sprinter team to deliver things, particularly with new technologies they don't understand. So again, the importance of the rest of your organization being able to understand what you're building is powerful. And the key thing that I think people need to be careful of is two-speed IT is great, but don't build a disconnected two-speed IT organization. We need both teams going in the same journey, just at different speeds. We don't want them going on complete tangents to each other, because you're just going to end up with problems. And I think one of the things that I see in companies I've worked with is sometimes people believe the answer to that is DevOps. DevOps is great. DevOps practices are good, but that doesn't mean that the sprinter team can just say DevOps is the answer to making sure this works. You have to still factor in how you bring the marathon team on your journey. And with that, I wanted to kind of pitch what I think, you know, many companies say we embrace the cloud, but what does that actually mean? So to me, if you're any kind of organization, particularly a two-speed one, embracing the cloud means everybody's getting involved. It's not just one or two people pioneering ahead, building new technology. You need to take the rest of the company with you. And I think a good sign of whether your organization's in a good place with this is if you feel that, you know, from an operations perspective, you perceive cloud to be part of your business as usual operation. It's not something new and different and extreme that you just do on occasion. Then I think you're in a great place to really leverage the power to get those two-speed advantages. And just before I finish for questions, I just want to shout out about a competition I'm running at the minute. So I run a training workshop called Zero to Cloud in One Day, powered by Azure. which I'm getting a lot of interest in. So I'm running a competition at the minute where open to anybody, pretty much anybody anywhere really, but if you want to enter, the prize is to get a free training workshop for your team. So I'll come and do a workshop about all this kind of stuff, covering loads of different Azure things for about 10 people in your IT department, which would be a great way to help you get into really leveraging Azure. But on the back of that, otherwise, just like to invite any questions from anybody. Otherwise, feel free to grab me during the during the breakout sessions, and we can go through some of this in more detail. Sorry? It's theazurecoach.com. I'll pop it on Twitter after this. No questions? I got told that would happen. This is where Magnus has to think of a really good question on the spot.
Right, you can't ask a Swedish audience to ask questions. It doesn't happen. yes, question. Awesome.
Yes, the terminal in Minecraft, how did you make that?
Okay, so we've got a little bit of time left, I think, so I'll... the question is how do you create the terminal in Minecraft? So I think we've got a little bit of time left, so let's have a bit of a play around with some of that then. So I use something called the Tekkit Launcher, which is I laugh at some. Let's face it, it's AJ does the Minecraft bit. Oh, has that happened again? Okay. Yeah, we're good now. So the key thing in our little father-son IT team, AJ does all the Minecraft stuff, I'll do all the Azure stuff, and he's taught me how to do some of the Minecraft stuff. And Minecraft can be really awkward to get your head around how it really works properly in terms of like mods and stuff like that. And when I first started looking at it, he would always say, oh, I want a mod to do this, I want a mod to do that. And there's, you know, it's a bit like NuGet, there's thousands of mods. How do you make sure you get one that's you can trust's okay? So there's this thing called the Tekkit Launcher, which kind of, if you imagine it, packages up a bunch of mods and gives you like a pre-modded version. And I'll see if I can kind of just spin that open and show you guys it, because it's actually, you know, from a Minecraft perspective, it's way better than doing it yourself. So you can kind of go on and you can download different flavors of Minecraft. So the one we use is called ComputerCraft because it gives you a load of widgets for doing programming stuff in it. You can get other ones. You can get like Jurassic Park Minecraft if you want to go around and, you know, play with T-Rexes and things like that. And you go into the mod packs and you can see down the side here, you can just go and search the library. So that's the one I use there. You can do vanilla, you know, here's Jurassic Craft. And that's the best way to start. Then when you go into Minecraft, so I'm just going to wing a bit on the fly here. So you go into your inventory and if you go to the right here, you've got this thing called ComputerCraft, which gives you a bunch of stuff to play with. Now, man, there's loads of stuff you can do in here. I'll tell you guys about my next idea, I think, in a minute. So let's take an advanced computer and we'll put it in our little inventory here. You can see you've got things like monitors, wireless modems, network. I mean, somebody actually, if you look on YouTube, somebody built a proper computer out of Minecraft stuff. That's like a mechanical computer. There's amazing stuff people have built. You've even got like network cables and all sorts of stuff, yeah? But what you would do if we go down here and put our computer down, you can now start writing programs on it. So if you right-click, it opens up the terminal. And So what I do is I start with, say, edit, I don't know, hello world. So I can now start writing code. And the language you use is a language called Lao. And, you know, you can do, I don't know whether I want to write on the fly Minecraft code. It's too much pressure to do that because it won't. I'll show you guys some code in a minute. But you basically write the code, then you'd control save it. Control exit. Now you're back on the main terminal. You can run the program you've just written. So what I'll do is there's a cheap way if you know what you're doing. Let me see where this is. So so if you know what you're doing, you can go to the file system and you can make your life a load easier, because editing in that terminal editor is quite difficult. But if you go to Technic, mod packs, computer craft, save games. Blah, blah, blah. Right, so in here, basically every computer you put in the world gets a folder here. And there's a little command you can write that tells you what the number of your computer is. So I can go in and I can have a look here. And here's some programs that I've written previously for that computer. So you can actually just edit them in Notepad's the easiest thing to do. And you can also import APIs. So what I did is I went to one of the websites. Some guy wrote an open source JSON parsing API for Minecraft. So I basically just grab his code, stick it in the folder, and I can do an import command, and then that's how I parse the JSON. So if we have a look, where's show courses as one of the ones we used in the demo. So you can see here at the top, I've got I've got a little function one myself, and I load the JSON one. And then what you can do is in here, I'm referencing the monitor. So I can say create a monitor variable, and that wrap command tells it the direction that the monitor is. So as the blocks are touching each other, if I do a wrap left, it means it's the block to the left of the computer. But I can actually have cables that I could reference instead. Or with a wireless modem, you can kind of reference external objects. So I've then got my URL for my API management. So notice it's HTTPS as well, so we've got some security going on. If I wanted to get complex, I could even put keys in there and all that kind of magic as well. And down here, so basically what I do is I'm creating, I'm not so sure it's this one, I think I'm just doing a URL here, but some of the other ones, I'm just creating some JSON in a string, use the parser to handle it, and we do an HTTP GET here, pass our URL, pass our headers, and then down here we've got that JSON decoder, so I get basically a table, and then I can just treat it like an array, and I can get the data out of the table, display it on the monitor, and you know, it's pretty simple. You know, that's what we got, about 20 lines of code there. I'm sure you could, you know, a bit more practice, you could make that a bit more efficient maybe, but that kind of gives you an idea of how simple it is to start programming it. And you know what? To be fair, these days, if you've got JSON and HTTP capability, you can kind of do pretty much anything, you know. My next idea, so I'll see if I can find these in the thing. So you see here, you've got things like this thing called a wireless turtle. So we're just starting to learn how these work at the minute. And the idea of turtles kind of like something like a robot, like, you know, Mars rover kind of thing. So what I can do is I can set this turtle off and send instructions to it. And so I was thinking about a few ideas of things we could play around with that. So you can do things like move forward, move backwards, move up, move down, dig, build a block. So what I was thinking was it would be quite cool if I could build a library. So let's take API automation in Azure. Got a gallery of scripts. Let's have a gallery of architecture blueprints. You know, I can go on and I can go, maybe I go on my phone and I say, right, here's my turtle, send it a message, go and build this building. And it goes and downloads a blueprint from the cloud maybe, and then it goes and builds a castle or a house or something like that. And kind of, you know, just some crazy, you know, once you've got that, people can start building blueprints in your library, and it opens up a whole new world of stuff you can muck around with, you know. But the key thing is, you know, that it's just kind of open your mind to new things you can do. And the minute we can connect a game like this to the cloud, world's our oyster, you know. Anybody got any other ones? Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Everybody's just thinking now what they're going to go home and do next with Minecraft.
What's quite cool, I've just got a text here.
Yeah?
And AJ's not happy because I called something the wrong name.
Oh, did you?
So
oh.
I'm sacked.
Oh, no.